I'm talking about worldwide employee engagement, getting everybody to feel more a part of how they can be a solution.
The announcement that we had about Q4 had in it one of the biggest customer loyalty killers I've seen in many years.
It's going to be tough in Q1. I can't tell you standing here that we'll be in the black. I can tell you that with confidence that we have that opportunity.
Welcome to Digital's Greenbelt facility. And today's a real special day. It's my privilege to announce and introduce Bob Palmer, Chairman and Chief Executive Officer of Digital Equipment Corporation. Bob.
Thank you, Jim. Well, thank you very much. Thank you, Jim. It's a pleasure to be here with the Federal Region here in the Washington, D.C. area. I'm told I'm technically in Maryland, but for those of our employees worldwide that will be watching the DVN later, it's important to know that we're located right here at the seat of the U.S. government area where much of your business is conducted. You know, fiscal year 96 was a very good year for the federal region. We achieved 120% of budget, some $763 million in revenue as a result of your efforts. And we won a number of new contracts where we had not previously been visible, particularly in workstations, where we had lost our leadership some years ago in the 80s. You've regained that in the year just ended. And specifically, we won the Air Force workstation contract worth some $250 million over the next 5 years. Desktop 5, which is about $105 million opportunity, again, over the next 5 years. EIS, which is one of my favorite opportunities, but unfortunately is classified, can't tell you about it, but it's worth quite a bit over the next few years and very important to the international security. Digital PCs added to the Super Mini contract for the first time, a potential at least of over $100 million. So a lot of very specific, and unfortunately the time that we have, I can't go through all of your wins. But let me say the corporation thanks you, and I thank you personally for your efforts in 96. The reward, of course, is a greater quota for 97, but that's the way life is. I mean, that's the way life works. You know, those that achieve get an opportunity to excel again. You know, I'm the executive partner for the federal business, and I enjoy that role. I enjoy your customer base. I'm very intrigued by the applications that you bring forward. Frequently, the leadership applications that, in some cases, particularly in advanced programs, they don't make their way into the commercial sector for a number of years. But being in that vanguard helps us be more effective in the commercial sector, so I'm quite dedicated to it. And in that regard, you have a friend at the very top of the corporation for this business. Of course, all employees have a friend at the top of the corporation, and we're trying to do the best we can to support all employees to be successful in whatever role they have in helping this company through its turnaround. And what I want to cover today are about four major topics and leave some time for your questions and answers. First of all, I'll very briefly review the FY96 performance. I want to discuss up front some of the issues that I know are on your minds and on the minds of our employees worldwide. At the same time, I do want to underscore the progress that we actually achieved in 96, and for that matter, over the last few years. And then I want to talk about what are the priorities for fiscal year 97. And again, try to leave time for questions that you may have or things that I say that really aren't that clear. And please, I want to encourage you, as I always do, ask whatever question you really have. Don't be worried about tact or being embarrassed. Just whatever's on your mind when you get the chance, ask the question. I'll do my best to answer that question. Now, this first slide is going to talk about the results. And fundamentally, what you see here is a summary of the earnings, revenues, expenses, balance sheet. On the earnings, in Q4, we were well below what we had set out for ourselves to achieve as a corporation from operating earnings. In addition to that, we had a surprisingly large restructuring reserve that we had to take, and I'll talk about that in a minute, $492 million that wiped out all of the profit for 96, was a shock to you, a shock to most employees in digital, shock to the external community, and it's something we have to overcome, but I'll talk about that. Despite that, we did make significant progress during the year. If you exclude the restructuring charge, we earned $380 million in fiscal year 96. That's a $258 million improvement over the previous year. And over the two-year period of time is an improvement of $900 million. So significant accomplishment. Also, the total operating revenue for the fiscal year just ended at $14.6 billion was the highest in the company's history. And that's despite the fact that, as you know, we've sold businesses that accounted for more than $1 billion worth of revenue. And we made some progress on our operating expenses. Operating expenses were brought into 30% of revenues. And I can recall at one time, as I took on this role, it was up to 46% of revenues. It's down to 30%. It's not yet competitive, but clearly it's moving in the right direction. We've got a little more to do. And that, in fact, is what was driving the decision to take the restructuring reserve. I want to talk a minute about why is that such a shock, and what keeps us from being able to let you know in advance that something's going to happen. And I'm specifically talking to our worldwide audience. Many of you that are American probably understand better the laws that regulate securities of publicly traded companies that are headquartered in the United States. But fundamentally, let me just review it quickly for our audience. If you see that, you need to take actions to materially that will have a material impact on your company in terms of the cost of those actions. You are required by law, as soon as you have those actions well defined, to announce those, and you are precluded from any previous announcements. Like, you can't talk to your employees first, as you'd like to do. You have to announce to all interested parties, all shareholders, analysts, employees, vendors, customers, worldwide, simultaneously, that you have this charge that you're going to be taking in order to improve your competitiveness. The law requires it. So there's no wiggle room here. If you recognize that you have to do something further than we've already accomplished in order to be competitive, then you have to take this action. And you have to take that action and hit to your P&L just as we did in Q4. We didn't enter 96 expecting that we'd have to do that. In fact, I would say as late as December, January, February, I had no belief that we really had to take an action of that magnitude. Of course, we knew we had to continue to improve productivity. But as the results deteriorated further in Q3 and Q4, it became clear that we were still not competitive. We had to do something, and that's what led to that. Even so, even though these earnings are not what we expected to achieve, excluding restructuring, there was significant progress, and in particular, the balance sheet was strengthened greatly. You know, a few years ago, that balance sheet was getting quite weak. We now have a very strong balance sheet in the sense that $2 billion in cash, the best cash collection we've had and the best reserves that we've had in over 5 years. Our debt remains low for an industrial company of this size. And among the top 10 or 15 companies headquartered in the United States, Digital's in that group in terms of strength of its balance sheet. So we've got plenty of cash to afford our restructuring, to afford the investments to keep our products and services first rate and leadership, to do all the things we need to do. But we had no way to avoid taking that restructuring reserve. Now, I want to talk about, although I've already started somewhat on the restructuring, I want to talk about what does that mean to you as employees worldwide? Well, first of all, it doesn't feel good. It doesn't feel good to me, it doesn't feel good to you, because we'd had a couple of years here where we were making consistent progress, and it looked like we finally had this stuff behind us. And to about an 85 or 90% level, that turns out to be true in terms of all we've been through so far. But we're still not quite there. When I mentioned that we're not yet competitive, it says that in terms of our overall operating expenses as a company at about 30% of revenues, we still had about one-third of the way to go. We've done about two-thirds. If you look like, I said it differently, in 1994, the company as a net profit had a loss of 5% of revenue. The leaders in this industry have a profit of about 7%. That's a 12 percentage point difference. In the year just ended, not counting restructuring, we had a profit of about 3%, best we've had in years. And, you know, going from -5 to +3, 8 points, the total distance we need to go is 12. We've got about two-thirds of it accomplished. And more than that, in terms of all of the things we've put in place to enable closing the final gap. On a very region by region, person by person, organization by organization basis, this creates anxiety. We know that we're going to have some valued employees that will be leaving our company over the next year. We know the number's about 7,000. We know in some cases pretty accurately where they are and what needs to be done. But we do business in 100 countries, and the laws are different in all of these countries, And whatever we do, we have to be consistent with the local laws, the customs, what's appropriate, what's right for the employees, and at the same time, we can't waver from getting our cost structure correct and competitive. You know, by being a market-driven company as we are, there is no alternative for your businesses other than being cost competitive. Customers do not have to buy from us. Our costs have to be in line. That being said, our products and services are the best that we've ever had. So we'll get through this. We hope to do it as quickly as possible, but I'm sure that this is going to be a lingering anxiety issue, and it's up to management and employees to pull together, get it behind us as quickly as we can. We can provide the tools at the top of the company, but the work is actually done in business units and through the territories and geographies in which we do business. Now, another thing I wanted to talk about is that when we talked about our Q4 earnings and we talked about why we had such a disappointment, we identified two major things. Of course, in a company this large, just talking about the PCBU and our European shortfall doesn't cover all of our issues. But those were the two major things. And just real quickly, I want to talk again about the PCBU. I recently had an opportunity to talk to them directly, their headquarters, Massachusetts, and we had a good dialogue, I think. Good questions and answers and some good understanding. And really, just to hit the high points, how did we get in so much trouble? We weren't watching our channels of distribution. We got too much product into the channels. And then when the price declines occurred that were far greater than anybody anticipated, because we had so much more exposure in the channel, we were much more adversely affected. The products were good. You know, manufacturing had done a good job. Design had done a good job. We'd done a good job of creating demand, but we hadn't done a good job of managing our logistics and our channels. That being said, we want to look at some of the successes we had. You know, a few years ago, 3 years ago, we had a business in PCs that was $200 to $300 million. In 3 years, we grew that a factor of 10 to a run rate of $2.5 to $3 billion. And that was during a time, those of you in sales will certainly remember, when we didn't have much else to offer. You know, this gave us, it gave you some way to go into the customer and say, I've got something. You know, I've got something of interest. And that's really, really important. And our people in the PC unit can feel proud of what they accomplished there. Yeah, I'm disappointed, and they're disappointed with Q3 and Q4, but we're fixing it. If you looked at some of the highlights of what has been done in Europe on that PC space, we increased our sales. In the Asia Pacific, we increased our sales. In the U.S., sales in Q4 were down in PCs, but on the other hand, sales out of the channel were up about 20%. And so that was a very important focus on getting that inventory down and getting it manageable. Now, we're not quite where we want to be, but we are where we said we would be at the end of the fourth quarter, and we're on a track to be where we said we would be at the end of the first quarter. And I expect by the end of the second quarter, we'll have this unpleasantness behind us. Relative to Europe, in the case of Europe, we didn't have this organized quite right. That is management, my responsibility, and the people that work for me, do not have this organized to be successful. We had a number of difficulties in Europe because we didn't thoroughly understand the difference in terms of indirect channels, the relative maturity of indirect channels in Europe versus in the United States that we're more familiar with. We dropped a few customers through the cracks as we tried to move to more and more indirect sales. We had a number of things that weren't working in our favor, mostly driven from the top, carried out maybe not in the best way in some cases. We did it to ourselves. The opportunity is there. Europe is very important to digital. It's our largest single geography in terms of business. We have to succeed in Europe. We plan to succeed in Europe. We're making a number of changes there, learning from our mistakes, correcting some of these things, getting more focused on a few elite partners, really, in the indirect channels, bringing in some additional talent, and learning how to create a better metric system, not only in Europe, but worldwide, in terms of our field resources so that we can be successful. And we're doing those things. Another issue, clearly, is this whole issue of the accounts business unit, the systems business unit, the enterprise worldwide sales force. What are we doing here? Well, basically, we're trying to correct errors that we implemented in the last couple of years. We had a model to set up the ABU, the largest accounts, on a P&L structure. And we had a model to set up the indirect sales accounts, the SBU accounts. And these had separate P&Ls, and we created for you a lot of internal conflict. We found that we weren't able, even though we hoped that this model would be more effective, we found that we weren't able to get the metrics right, to get the right behavior. We had conflict in our own organizations. who had conflict in front of our customers, and clearly that had to be corrected. If I think about it, I won't really apologize for the fact that we tried something and it didn't work. That's the nature of life. You do that. I will apologize for taking so long to recognize and to get my management to accept the fact that this isn't working, that we have to do something to fix this, to enable you to be more successful. We took too long. It was clear long before we finally got up the energy to do what was necessary that we had to do something. I want to be really clear here. Some of the time in digital, we have this binary issue that, you know, things are either black or they're white. It's a zero or it's a one. It's a win or it's a loss. And that is not the case here. This is not about winners and losers in ABUs and SBUs and that sort of thing. This is about getting a model that more efficiently supports our customers and a model that you can understand, a metric system that you can say, yeah, I see I have an opportunity to be successful in my field role. I have a way, I understand the thing, it's simple enough to get my brain around, and I think I might have a chance to do it. The number looks large, but I don't do it the way I used to do it. I've got a new model for doing it that involves virtual teams, other resources. There's a logical plan here, and I believe I've got a chance at it. And by the way, management is going to try to help me instead of impede my progress. And that's what we're trying to accomplish, and we've done a lot in the last several weeks. I am really encouraged with the cooperation and the teamwork I've seen at the highest levels. Yesterday, I sat in on a meeting sort of ad hoc as the quarterly meeting that Harry Copperman has for the SBU. The room had SBU and previous ABU executives working together, and it was clear to me that there was genuine teamwork there and a genuine focus on what do we do next to help you be more successful. Hopefully you'll have some questions around this, and I'll get to it. Now, to keep on with this so that there's time for some questions, let me move on to the next slide. This just captures what I said previously. Over the 2 years, we had a $900 million improvement in profits from operations. At $900 million, we would have captured for our shareholders except for that restructuring reserve. On the other hand, if we're going to continue this progress, continue growing those profits, as I've already mentioned, we had to take the reserve, and we've got to use the money to get more competitive. That is our intent. We're going to do it. This is a tremendous accomplishment. You should feel quite proud of what you contributed, all of our employees worldwide, to making this possible. This particular chart's also very impressive. This shows on a year-over-year basis what is the percent change in product revenue. And if it went back several years, you'd see that for the most part it stayed below zero. That is, we were losing. The last couple of years, we've been winning again. 15%, then 13% rather, than 16% year-over-year increase in revenue growth on our products. So we have products that people want to buy to solve solutions, and we have people that know how to sell them, and it's reflected in this chart. The next chart shows the revenue increases that we've had on a year-over-year basis in a number of the strategic areas that are really important for driving our future growth. Let me just touch on a few of them. Alpha revenues grew 45% year over year. This was driven in large part by increasing demand for our turbolaser systems, that is the Alpha Server 8000 family, and more recently by the mid-range servers, the 4100 systems. These systems offer unprecedented performance and price performance, as you know, and you're winning with these systems, and that's reflected in this data. Our Unix revenues continued to accelerate. Even though the base is getting larger every year because of your previous success, we were up over 50% year-over-year in Unix growth. And much of that, in fact, most of it, is to new applications or new customers, places where we weren't before. Our Windows NT revenues more than doubled. The base was small, it's getting larger, and it's critically important to our future. I'm going to talk about it a little more in a minute. And we saw strong growth in almost all of the other areas on this chart, including OpenVMS on Alpha. The Affinity program works. VMS is selling on Alpha to couple with the Affinity program so that the client can use Windows NT at the desktop, VMS to back up their important data and applications. It's robust, it's secure, it's scalable, they trust it. And as we get more and more proficient with Windows NT working with Microsoft, which is inevitable, we'll be able to help them move that further and further through the enterprise. This strategy is working. We've seen growth in Intel servers, network products, storage products, multi-vendor services. all of these areas had approximately 30% plus growth. So very good growth there, something to be proud of. Now, on the services side, one reason that I'm quite confident that we're going to be able to continue to improve our profitability year over year, not to say that we'll have any easy quarters, but year over year, I expect to improve on that $380 million this year and to continue that improvement, is because our services business has done an excellent job in re-engineering what they need to do from a strategy point of view to maintain the profitability and increase the profitability going forward. Now, for the last several years, we've had a decline in the VMS VAX maintenance business. It's inexorable. It's going to continue. And we've been scrambling to offset that decline, which is higher margin business, with new services. I'm very confident on the strategy that John Rando and his team have defined and implemented, and we now have three new business units with very clear strategies and P&Ls, and that's going to be a major part of our success in the future. Also, for those of you here in this room, we've made it a little easier for you to sell the new availability services by getting some package services with single part numbers that you can order at the time of making the system sale, making it somewhat easier for you to do business and for our customers to do business with us. The emphasis of the new services activities is clearly going to be on large and medium-scale enterprises, as is the strategy for the PCBU. Now, in our PCBU, we didn't have it quite right. We've made some mistakes, as I said previously, but today I'm quite confident in Bruce Claflin's strategy. We're focusing on the medium and enterprise accounts where we have credibility. We're focused on client-server computing. We're focused on the server side primarily of that business where we know something, some differentiation in terms of cluster technology, systems technology, and we've got a much clearer picture of how we can differentiate ourselves and win in services and in the PCBU, and in both cases, on large and medium-sized enterprises. Our service strategy aligned closely with the corporate strategy. And by the way, the new compensation programs are intended to align the compensation very clearly with the corporate strategy. And we can say some more about that. So we expect revenues to increase, and we expect the profitability to increase there. So if I look back over fiscal year 96, there are a number of just highlights that you can refer to that we accomplished you ought to feel good about. In terms of a corporate growth strategy, we developed one. It's clear, it's easy to understand, it's credible. The analyst and the customers and hopefully the sales force understands it, believes it, can sell it, and we're investing to support it. High performance, 64-bit Unix platforms, very large memory databases, technology where we are the leader with strategic partners in the database industry. We're the leader. We have a tremendous opportunity to continue to grow that business. Windows NT across the enterprise, depending on our Open VMS affinity program, we are clearly have the opportunity, clearly, to be the leader as that Windows NT initiative becomes pervasive in the industry, which is a matter of time in my view. Internet connectivity within and between enterprises. We established a great deal in the last year in that space. Very impressive. In the case of the alliances, we created a unique alliance with Microsoft, the Alliance for Enterprise Computing. We created an alliance with Microsoft and MCI around internet and intranet computing. We created the Alliance for Enterprise Management, one of the biggest problems your customers have, with computer associates, dedicated as they are and we are to heterogeneous networking environments, distributed client-server environments, where there's a good congruence between their objectives and our objectives, and this is going to pay off in 97 and beyond. And most recently, our strategic alliance around semiconductor technology with one of the world's absolute leading technology companies in semiconductors, Samsung Electronics, to add to the one we already had with Mitsubishi Electronics. Let me say that. Samsung could have struck a strategic alliance with any semiconductor company. They chose Digital because of Alpha. And this is a very big deal. In the future, going forward, people that want to design Alpha systems and circuits into their systems we'll have three suppliers at least, Mitsubishi Electric, Samsung, and Digital. There'll be competition, there'll be price competition, there'll be different kinds of I/O features and attributes of the circuits, and we are going to build that market, and we're dedicated to doing that. In terms of our products and services, I mean, everybody in here knows about Alta Vista. We went from just nowhere in the internet to, 16 million hits a day during the work week on Alta Vista. And we established the internet software business unit to take and build on that Alta Vista technology to develop software products. And there'll be some stuff out in the next 8 or 10 days or so talking about our strategy around that Internet Software Business Unit, some new ideas that we have. We're very excited about it. Eileen Lang and her team are off and charging and building a new business around the future based on intranet connectivity. It's exciting. Something is happening, and we're getting recognized for it. In the case of our true cluster solutions, we're building on the fact that we invented clusters. We know more about cluster technology than anyone, and we have introduced some just absolutely mind-boggling performance with our partner, in this case, the strategic alliance with Oracle that we continued to build on last year. And our true cluster solutions, you may recall, we just demonstrated in April more than 30,000 transactions per minute. 30,000, just blew away all the previous benchmarks, and at a better price, that is a much higher performance at a given price than any other competitive solution. In addition to that, we introduced clusters for Windows NT, which brings additional availability and reliability to the Windows NT capability, and we're going to build on that. So we're going to build on our cluster capability and our systems knowledge going forward. We introduced the 4100, as I mentioned before. That brought VLM capability into the mid-range. Nobody has that. Did that hurt our turbolaser sales? Probably so. In many applications, that 4100 solution or one of that family member is more cost-effective for our customers than the 8000 solution in maybe their initial implementation. So what? Our objective is to bring the most effective solution to our customers that we can, whether it's an Intel architecture, an Alpha architecture, whether it's Unix or Windows NT or OpenVMS, what is the solution that we can bring to the customer that's most efficient, most effective for that customer? And to make that happen, to make sure that we in enterprise sales worldwide have metrics that encourage you to do that, not metrics that discourage you or that steer you to one solution versus another in terms of your own compensation, but metrics that steer you to do the right thing for the customer. What's the most competitive solution for our customer? That's what we've got to stay focused on. We introduced another version, the newest version of our ultra-portable notebooks. I'm fortunate to have one. I love it. It's widely being accepted. We're a little sold out right now. That's not all bad, considering my previous remarks about what happens when you have too much inventory and the prices go down. I'd rather stay a little sold out. And so that is our strategy, to be a little short. Keep selling them. We're not that short, and we can get delivery quickly. But we're not going to have piles of them sitting around as we did when we did our first introduction. So you kind of learn from your little boo-boos here. One of the most impressive technical things that's ever been done, in my view, is we continued to develop our translation software. Software that enables us to translate applications that were written for 32-bit Intel architecture to Alpha. And we call this technology not emulation, but a combination of emulation and translation, binary translation, and a software that learns as it goes. I mean, an extraordinary accomplishment. We call it FX32. You may recall we won Best Technology at Show in Comdex last year in Las Vegas with that technology. We are about to introduce that technology into the marketplace. And this is, I can't think of anything more important to our company from a technology point of view in establishing us as the leader with Alpha and Windows NT. This will let the applications written for Windows NT and for other 32-bit and 16-bit through emulation applications written originally for the Wintel architecture to run efficiently on Alpha. And for sure, those applications ported to Alpha, written native for Alpha, are going to run beyond any other platform in terms of performance. You will have the opportunity in sales to really make good on the assertion that digital can provide the widest range of performance platforms for Windows NT applications and Windows 32-bit and 16-bit applications for your customers. This is critically important, and it's critically important that the company worldwide get totally behind our software efforts in Windows NT compilers, FX32 translation technology, and really appreciate what our software engineering teams have done. So you're going to see from the field perspective a real difference in 97, a lot more emphasis on Windows NT. Oh, shall we be binary now and mean that that means we don't sell Unix and Windows and OpenVMS anymore? Please, no. It just means that we're going to continue to invest heavily in Unix. We're going to extend our lead in 64-bit capability and our capabilities, scalabilities, reliability, security. We're going to keep doing that. We're going to keep investing in VMS where it makes sense. We're going to keep pushing our affinity program and making investments, not only in engineering but in marketing. But we're going to greatly increase our marketing and engineering investments around Windows NT on both Alpha and Intel platforms. And you'll be seeing that. Okay, so what do we need to do here going forward? If you think about three major priorities in addition to some of the things I've woven into this talk, we've got to work on increasing our customer loyalty. Some people prefer to talk about that as increasing customer satisfaction. It's more than that. It's customer satisfaction, yes, but so much loyalty that that customer wants to recommend digital to other customers. We're a ways from that. But we have the products and services, and we have the talent to achieve that. It doesn't happen quickly. Think about it from your own perspective as a consumer. As you become loyal to a given brand of something that you buy, whether it's clothing or an automobile or anything, you know, once you're pretty well satisfied, it's hard for a competitor to win you over. It's tough. We managed to turn off a lot of customers in the late 1980s, early 90s. It's tough to win them over, but you're doing it. I'm proud of what you're accomplishing. I didn't expect it would be easy. Neither did you. You're succeeding. We're going to continue to succeed. We've got to focus on increasing customer loyalty. To do better, you need a little help from the corporation. You need better tools. You need to be able to configure systems a lot quicker. You need a lot more rapid response to quotations. We've actually made some progress. Now, I'm told that, I'm going to be careful how I say these things, I'm told that the average turnaround for an international quote in our company can now be as few as 5 days, down from 30 days or worse just 1 year ago. And we're keeping working on improving it. We've simplified the product return process for our partners. If you have a participating partner in this program, we can get a credit memo taken care of. We can service that partner 50% faster than a year ago. Of course, the objective is not to. The objective is for them to sell it. And in that regard, we're doing a lot better job creating demand for those partners. We're improving all of the elements of our support for the field. And I don't know of anything more important in Harry Kopperman's area of responsibility than making sure we make those investments and that they come to fruition around Omega, around our call handling services, around extensions to the toolkits that you have available to you through your laptops and through the internet, and the information that you have in the customer database that we're building. I'm very impressed with the programs that Harry and his team have put in place. I've seen them. They're in development. Some are partially rolled out. Some you haven't seen yet. I've spent a little time going through it, and I'm impressed and encouraged. Throughout all of 97, you're going to see consistent improvement in the tools that are made available to you so you can be more effective in increasing your productivity. I think everybody in the company probably knows that on a yield per salesperson, digital is not competitive. We haven't been for a long time. I think everybody in the company knows that's not from lack of intellect, effort, energy, dedication in our sales force. I certainly know it. You know it. But we have had a history of making it very complicated for you to be successful. And we're working to fix that. You know, one way that I want to back that up is that when we went to redesign this new sales compensation program and the way that Enterprise 1, 2, and 3 is going to work worldwide, we invited experts from the field that actually do this stuff, people that actually sell, to be participants in the design. And what we were seeking is something that's simple enough to understand, that you know can be tracked, that is a proxy for what we actually do. What we actually do is sell enterprise solutions. And enterprise solutions are more than boxes. They're applications. They're networking products. They're clients. They're servers. It's Intel and it's Alpha. It's all the operating systems that I mentioned. It is all of this portfolio of things that we have to offer to the customer. But a proxy for measuring that is the new availability services and the servers primarily. These are a good proxy for measuring our success overall. And focusing on sales out and team success promotes team behavior as opposed to individual parochial behavior, and that's what we're going to get. Oh, by the way, do I think we have it exactly right? Probably not. Probably not. We're going to learn as we go. We're going to continue to listen to the field. We're going to make modifications that help you be more successful. Now, that's part of that middle bullet, which is increasing employee engagement. In this conversation, I've been focusing on the field because I'm here in the field. But I'm talking about worldwide employee engagement, getting everybody to feel more a part of how they can be a solution, how they can add to customer success, how they can increase customer loyalty. What can they do? How do we rebuild that? We know that the world has changed, not just for digital. This is not just a digital issue. On a global basis, the globalization of the world has created tremendous angst in all industries and companies because the old contract of lifetime employment and loyalty is not sustainable in this globalization. It's true in Europe, it's true in Japan, it's true in the United States, it's true. We've got to have a new model. And we have to work together as all of us are employees of this company. It's not management and employees in my model. We all work for the same company. We've got to work together to figure out what is that new contract? What's the new deal between all employees and the corporation? Because it's not the old deal, not for digital or any other company. To that extent, we have a team of executives leading a program to figure out and make progress on defining that. How are we going to go forward? This is primarily the responsibility, clearly, of Sid Feralis and the Human Resource Organization. He is supported by Peter Mercury from our services organization and Graham Shorter from Network Services. This team is responsible for defining the architecture. We've got focus groups going out throughout the world to get input, to have dialogue, to understand how do we redefine what this employee engagement and employee partnership is going to be. And I'm very optimistic we're going to learn. I'm told that at this point we've got about 60 focus groups worldwide going on, spending some serious energy and time to listen and try to incorporate what we hear against market realities. This has got to be real. This can't be about fluff and nonsense. This has got to be a pragmatic, new relationship that we all feel good about and we can be motivated. You want to be so successful in turning a company around, which we intend to be, and we've made a lot of progress, you got to feel good about, first of all, you as a human being, as an individual. You've got to feel good about your company that you represent and the quality of the products and services and people behind you. You've got to have that confidence in the relationship. And we have to have our employees engaged. And today, not surprisingly, given all that we've been through and this latest shock that we have about the restructuring reserve, we've lost a lot of that. We've slipped back. In my running analogies, I say we've stumbled. We've bloodied our knees here. And what we have to do is get up and keep running. That's the only way to arrive at the finish line. And you can be quite sure that your management, that I personally am dedicated to completing this task. We are going to regain our position as a leadership player in the information technology industry, not only in profitability and growth, which is an inevitable outcome of those first two bullets, not only in that, but in the quality of life that we enjoy as digital employees. I am confident in you. I know we can do it. Thank you very much. Thank you. Thank you. I'd like to take this opportunity to answer your questions directly. Although this is a field organization, many of the questions that you have may not only impact the field, but digital worldwide. I find that in these DVNs or any town meetings that I have, for that person that finally has the courage to ask the question, there's at least 8 or 10 people in there that wish they'd heard that question answered. So you can be sure, if you just get up the courage to ask the question, a lot of people here would like to know the answer, and a lot of people worldwide would be interested in the question and the answer. So don't be timid here. Again, keep in mind, we're on the same team here. It's not I'm here to capture something or I'm worried about some question. There's not any question you're going to ask that I haven't at least thought about or probably at least or been asked by somebody. It's very unlikely you'd be able to embarrass me with your question. Let's see. Maybe it's a challenge. Anyway, if you do, so what? I'm human like everybody else. If I get embarrassed, It'll be a novel thing for television. So let's ask a question. Yes.
Hi, Bob. Over the last 2 to 3 years, we've been working hard to improve the cash collections for the corporation. And you've mentioned we've done a great job of doing that, and we needed that cash to have the necessary monies for our investment and to help in the restructuring. And now that we've got up to the $2 billion, my question is this the best time for the corporation to go out there and spend maybe about $500 million in that limited cash to buy back stock for the corporation?
Oh, that's an excellent question. First of all, let me, again, I'm glad you reminded me, I want to give everybody worldwide credit that had anything to do with collections in Q4. We greatly overachieved what we had forecast. I mean, you did a great job worldwide in collecting, and that's how we managed to end up with the $2 billion that we have. As we look at our business plans going forward, we expect this year, even with the restructuring that we're going to spend, we won't spend all of the $492 million in the first year, but we'll spend a lot of it. Even with that, even with our continuing investments in research and engineering and in new marketing programs, we expect to be cash positive. We expect to generate enough cash to do all of that and be positive. Now, we had expectations every year, and they don't always come true. But even so, as our plans look pretty reasonable, we expect to be cash positive. Therefore, we think that it'd be a good time. The stock is depressed. It's down more than 50% from the peak. We have a good time to buy back into the company's treasury stock that's cheap, in our view, in order to stabilize our employee stock option purchase program. Every year, we distribute something on the order of 6 or 7% of the outstanding stock to our employees through the employee stock option purchase plan. What that means is, as a company, every year we've got to do 6 or 7% better to stay even on an earnings per share basis. I'd like to stabilize that. So let's go into the market and buy up enough shares to support the employee stock option program. And that's what that's about. If we are very successful, we may in fact buy more than that. In fact, I'd like to, because clearly we can improve our earnings per share by reducing the number of shares out there, as well as by improving the amount of earnings that we have. So we want to work all of the levers we have to improve our overall performance. But we have the cash. We believe we know how to invest it wisely in engineering, in marketing, in the restructuring. And we believe there'll be an adequate amount of cash to also stabilize our shares. So thank you. Other questions?
Bob, my name is Steve Davis. I work in the Windows NT marketplace in the field, and we're noticing increasing pressure on the part of the Pentium Pro providers like Compaq, etc., that are eroding our possibilities for making good sales with products like the 4100. And that, with the reorganization of the PCBU and the restructuring, we're lacking information in the field as to how is digital going to combat this trend in the field. We need data on our new products. We need information that we can give to our customers to show them that we have a plan for moving forward with the Alpha Systems to get them competitive with NT. And I'd like to know any information you can give us on that.
We have a number of initiatives, as I mentioned in my previous remarks, to specifically support at a much higher level of visibility the Windows NT area that you talked about. But let me be clear, both on our Intel and our Alpha platforms. You know, when you think about it, our objective in the groups here is I'm charging the Intel-based platforms to bring out the absolute leadership performance platforms, cluster technology, anything that they can do from that Pentium Pro architecture. Let's make it the best we can, and let's offer that at the most affordable price to our customers. And concurrently with that, let's do exactly the same thing on our Alpha. Now, I can tell you that we're going to have some overlap. We're going to have some Alpha products that are priced awfully competitive with those Pentium Pro products and maybe provide more performance. Sometimes it'll be the reverse. The marketplace is the right place to decide what's the right solution, not internally. So I'm demanding from each of the groups put their best foot forward in terms of what they deliver to you to sell and make sure that you have all of the sales and marketing collateral so you can be effective. And what you're going to see, the first visible thing you'll really see is there's going to be a new advertising campaign that I just approved, actually reviewed again yesterday. That'll be kicked off immediately after our analyst meeting that we're holding September 3rd, 4th, 5th here in the United States. We're inviting analysts worldwide. We've got a number of things we're going to be talking about there. And usually, you know, we have these analyst meetings. Last year, that's where we introduced our new strategy. It really helped galvanize the marketplace. Usually we talk about bits and bytes, feeds and speeds, MIPS, transactions per minute. Being digital, we're going to get that in there somewhere. But what we're really going to talk about is our go-to-market model. We're going to talk about how we are going to market and support these products and services. And so that'll be the focus, and that'll be the first thing that will be very visible. Then you'll see that as they start to write their reports on what they've been told, and they start to influence your customers with hopefully positive remarks about the new digital's approach to market. How do we bring our products and services to our customers efficiently and completely with our partners? How do we do that? And that's where it'll be a lot of focus. Then you'll see immediately after that, in a number of major publications, a very different advertising campaign. Now you're going to see this campaign and you're going to say, wow, is that digital? And you can be sure that there is risk in this advertising campaign. But I can tell you, as the CEO, I'm guilty. Let's be clear on that. Ultimately, I'm guilty, good or bad. And I'll accept that responsibility. But the worst thing you can do in advertising is spend the money and have such a blah ad nobody reads it. I guarantee you that will not be the case in this campaign. Okay, now, behind that, we got to do a lot of work around our NT compilers. We're not getting the best out of our alpha systems or the NT applications because we haven't given enough support to our NT compiler group. Now, I'm determined to change that. So we're going to spend more money, or we're going to rearrange the money we're spending. But one way or another, I'm going to give more personal, direct support to the Windows NT compiler operations, the FX32 translation operations, and we're going to get real-time serious in helping them be more successful. Because there's no question about it. When the compilers are good, the platform greatly outperforms any other architecture. Intel themselves sees only one architecture out there that's remotely competitive, and it's Alpha. To our customers, we offer both, and we're going to continue to offer both. And if we can sell that to the analysts and the customers, I've been told by analysts that that is a unique proposition, that nobody else in the industry can really deliver that, because nobody else in the industry has the Alpha to go with the Intel to open that broad portfolio. But we have to not only say it, we have to invest and do it. And that's a little harder. We've had trouble as a company, as I've mentioned many times, ever getting behind more than one thing at one time. But this is a big company, and we've got to get behind a dual platform strategy and a multiple operating system strategy in order to bring a competitive solution to our enterprise customers. And we are going to do it. Other questions?
I noticed on your last slide that customer loyalty is a big issue, as well it should be. The announcement that we had about Q4 had in it one of the biggest customer loyalty killers I've seen in many years out in the field. The day that the Q4 numbers came out, my customer heard about it. It took me maybe 3 minutes to allay his fears. Everything was great. The next day, he heard about layoff. He had fear in his eyes. He was already dismantling plans to buy more alphas. I had to work with him probably for a couple of days to get everything back on track again. The following week, I was at a global telemedicine conference. A number of customers came up to me there, and the only thing they were talking about is, man, you know, we can't get the customer service reps out to fix our machines when we need them. We're having a hard time getting through to your telephone support. We're having a hard time tracking down our sales reps. And now you're cutting people. This means pain for us. And customer loyalty was taking a nosedive like one of the very few times I can think of in the last decade working out in the field. What are we going to do to prevent, you know, the next announcement from deep-sixing things even worse in this regard?
It's a very good question, and I'm glad you raised it for a number of issues. One is, I couldn't agree more with your observation. You can be sure, think about that observation you just made. You can be sure that the last thing the CEO wanted to approve was doing that restructuring reserve. That's the last thing I needed in my life. You know, that's the last thing.
You can be sure of that as a CEO, as a person that has empathy for human beings. I have been an employee all of my career. You know, I started at the bottom. I did not inherit this job by birthright. You know, I came up through exactly as you're doing, through the structure. I feel the pain of these layoffs, and I am personally bearing that responsibility. I don't like it. If I could have avoided it, I would have found a way to avoid it. On the other hand, the customers also want us to be competitive, and we are not. So, as I said, it's unavoidable. Your question is, what do we do about it? We've got to get it behind us as quickly as possible. We've got to make sure that we don't ever have to do it again by doing it more appropriately. But even so, we've come so far. The restructurings that we took before were equally as devastating. You may not remember them, but boy, I remember them. They were equally as devastating, and they were much larger. When we talked about a downsizing of 20,000 people in 1 year, that was really hard for you to overcome, but you did it. And I congratulate you on staying in there and explaining to the customers how we're going to get beyond it. But you also had a part of your question about, but what about the support for the customer? Yesterday, I became acquainted with the fact that we receive in the United States alone 75,000 to 80,000 phone calls a month. 75,000 to 80,000 a month from a customer or a partner, which is 70,000 opportunities to irritate the hell out of them, which is largely what we do, because we don't have... It's true. Because we don't have software and technology that enables us to rapidly move that customer with whatever question he or she has, or that partner or that sales exec, to the place to get the answer efficiently. And we don't capture the question, the data, and build the database that is rich with information if you could do so. But I can tell you, we're investing to fix it. And we have been investing for more than 9 months to fix it. And the rollout of the fix in the United States is scheduled for to test rollout, the beta test, for October 14th. And then by November, we'll have it, you know, debugged and flying. And it is going to be dynamite. I've gone through a review of it. We spent a lot of money and a lot of energy. And I am really excited about what it's going to improve in terms of our ability to handle those calls and distinguish ourselves, differentiate ourselves on service. You know, a very important point that Harry Copperman observed that I wholeheartedly support was that we've been a little bit spoiled in a sense, in that there's no question anymore anywhere that Alpha has the highest performance, that our platforms are the benchmark, that everybody's trying to see, well, my database would run that good too if I could just get it on Alpha. You know, that we've won that. I don't know if that's sustainable or not, really. In the real world, you got to expect that eventually the competition is going to close some of those gaps. We have to differentiate ourselves not only on technology, but on service. And it's call handling and database collection system that then will make the data available to you, and we can slice and dice and crunch. Running on two of our 8000 series is what it's running on today, two turbo lasers, lots of memory. We're going to log every one of those calls. We're going to capture all of that data, and we're going to be able to analyze the patterns and the buying and the questions. And we're going to use that to drive our marketing and our engineering. And this is a very different digital when we get that implemented. And it's not 10 years from now, it's October. Shortly thereafter, that'll be rolled out in Europe and Asia Pacific. This is a big deal. This is one of those areas where I am investing. I'm investing to make your life easier and to work on improving that customer satisfaction and loyalty. The other issue is we are not having substantial reductions in those support services that you're talking about. We're looking at substantial reductions in overhead functions and layers of management that may not be there to effectively help you. We've got to reduce the number of layers in our company. We've got to increase the span of management. We have to empower employees that they don't need as much day-to-day management, that they feel comfortable within some defined boundaries of being self-managing. Empowering employees, reducing the amount of overhead and infrastructure. And that's where the bulk of this 7,000's got to come from. So these are the things we're working on to try and solve that problem. And in the meantime, you've got to overcome that. Now, I know someone's waiting to answer a question, but I want to say one thing, and I'll get to your question. We don't need another headache like the one I just gave you. You don't need that. But I can tell you, we can create one real quick if we have a loss in Q1. Q1 is tough for us. It just happens that for whatever perverse reason, we chose to start our fiscal years with the weakest quarter worldwide for the computer information technology business. It cost me a lot of money to change that, and I can't afford it, so we're stuck with our fiscal year starting in July. As many of you know, most of the industrialized world seems to take vacations in July and August, and in particular, the Europeans take a lot of vacation time during that time, and a lot of your ability to get orders and to deliver goes away. So you don't have a true 13-week quarter in Europe or in the United States and in many other areas in the world. Yet our expenses have a 13-week reality. It's going to be tough in Q1. I can't tell you standing here that we'll be in the black. I can tell you that with confidence that we have that opportunity. It's close. It depends on you and your colleagues around the world to get the sales, and to get the sales for delivery this quarter. If we can stay in the black, even 2 pennies in the black, you won't have that headache. You won't have to spend your valuable time overcoming, yes, I know we lost money in Q1, but we're going to fix it in Q2. That's valuable time that's wasted. It's true, even if it happens that we lose money in Q1, we will overcome it in Q2, but it's a waste of your energy. It's another hurdle. You don't need that aggravation. Now, I can't fix that one for you. This is out in the field. If there's something I can do to help you close business, let me know. I'll help. And frequently, Jim does. And I think Jim, if he were standing here, would say, I've never turned him down. You know, I'll help. Other executives would help. But we all know that typically, you know, the big shot walks in and closes the thing with a handshake. You've done all the work. There's no illusion on my part about that. Okay, so there's very little I can really do except try to get a structure so you can succeed. We need to make Q1. Please, please, work as hard as you can individually. Make your number. At the end,
please flip this cassette over, rewind the beginning of side B. Thank you.